Let's welcome in our next guest who is about to be a regular on this program. We tell you that the best investment advice is right here on 1620 The Zone between 2 and 6, especially during football season. We're going to have great investment advisors all year long, and one of the big ones is right here from DonBest.com, also ToddsTake.com. It's Todd Furman joining us on the Hardee's Hotline. Todd, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, guys. But with that intro, I mean, you guys are making me sound like the Warren Buffett of sports. That puts an awful lot of pressure on me with a week to go before we start talking college football for real next Thursday.
Well, Warren's struggling right now. He's giving all his money away, so we'll take you.
He's still in a stronger position financially than I am, so I can't really throw stones in his general direction.
That is true. That is true.
All right, so I'm curious, because the win totals for college football came out a few weeks ago. Is there any movement that you've seen in those totals that has raised your eyebrows either way?
Nothing really surprising. I mean, there's definitely been some movement, and you talk about the Ohio States and Alabamas of the world. They've definitely been the two fan favorites as far as win totals are concerned. Whether it's a 10.5 or 11, books both here in Vegas and offshore have taken an inordinate amount of money on the Buckeyes. You look at that schedule and you really go through it and maybe think Michigan could be the only team that upends them. I never think it's that easy when you're talking about a team in double-digit win totals, especially in college. Another team, though, in the Big Ten that's taken a good amount of money to the over has been Nebraska, along with Michigan State. You look at those two teams, a lot expected from two quarterbacks for very different reasons. Taylor Martinez has been steadily improving, running that spread offense where Andrew Maxwell enters his senior season, and trying to get Michigan State over the hump from where they've been at.
We know Nebraska was 9.5. Where did Michigan start? Michigan State.
Michigan State started 8.5, but we've seen about a 60 or 65-cent move, which is pretty pronounced, and that's actually been from some of the professionals, as per some of my offshore sources. And it'll be interesting to see, because it's not a team that catches a ton of public money. A lot has been made about some of their inadequacies at quarterback, like Andrew Maxwell that we alluded to. But defensively, they should be as stout as ever. The real question becomes, can they replace a running back like Le'Veon Bell?
You know, I'm curious about that. When they're setting those lines, what do you think there's more value put in? I know they look at the entire team and the whole schedule and everything. But a great defense, a returning quarterback, what's more valuable?
In college, a lot more emphasis is put on that quarterback. You talk about a quarterback in some of these games with even the elite teams now, they're going to need to score 40 or 50 points a game. And any time you have a guy out there, whether he's going to go to the next level and be a first-round draft pick or just as dynamic as far as the college game's concerned, it'll keep you in every single football contest from the Big Ten to the SEC to the Sun Belt. But schedule is the single largest determinant when you look at these win totals, because so many of these teams will play cupcakes. They'll have unbalanced conference schedules. So that really is the main driver and why you'll see some teams that may not be better than others with win totals set at 9.5, while teams that we'd power rate a little bit higher only open at 8.
Todd Furman of DonBest.com. He's also worked at Caesars. He's joining us on the Hardee's Hotline. My partner here likes Iowa on the over. Who do you think is the best play on win totals from the Big Ten?
I actually like Nebraska quite a bit. Now, I know the number is out to -140 in some spots, but if you can find them at 9.5 minus $1.10, like we talked about schedules, this should be very manageable. The only cause for concern there is Coach Pelini seems to be stuck on 8-4 seasons as the head man in Lincoln, but I think Nebraska is poised for a big season. Real tough to try and figure out what you're going to get at the bottom of the conference. I know there's heavy juice being attached to Purdue and Illinois at a lot of the books, but I don't see either of those teams winning 3 games or more. So I'd actually be inclined to lay upwards of $3 to go under on Purdue if you get that win total at 5, 5.5.
What are folks doing, or what are the books doing about Johnny Manziel and A&M numbers, whether it be totals or the first week's bet? How are they handling that?
I mean, we'd really like the NCAA to make a ruling on
that
so we
can
figure things out. I mean, it creates a headache as much as anything else. A&M's win total was 9.5 with him out there. Really don't expect to see their win total posted anywhere amid all this speculation. The interesting part is for week one, some of the offshore books actually have A&M listed as a 27-point favorite now, down from 28 against Rice, assuming Manziel will start. If he doesn't, expect that price to open around 22.5. SEC West odds have also been affected. A lot of books have pulled those numbers. And national championship odds off the board, which is interesting considering Texas A&M was probably the third or fourth most heavily bet teams at a lot of the bigger sports books.
Is everybody putting a line on the Rice game for week one?
Everyone has not. It's off the board at most spots.
Okay.
So if any of the listeners out there in Omaha are headed out to Vegas and they're looking to bet that game to make that a huge wager, they're going to be a little disappointed. I think that price will stay off the board until late next week.
Speaking of Johnny Manziel, what's the latest on the prop numbers as far as whether he does play or not?
Those numbers have been pulled off, which makes me believe that he will be the starting quarterback when A&M starts their season next week. The interesting part has been his Heisman numbers. He was as low as 6-1 in the Heisman Trophy pools. That number ballooned out to 15-1. I even saw an 18-1. That price has then come down a little bit. We're looking at closer to 12.5-1 as the prevailing price there.
Which makes sense that it'd be a tough ride, being it's never been done before, and we saw what happened to Tebow the next year and his drop in numbers. So it's kind of a history there.
Exactly. So much pressure on him to try and do that. Plus, all these opposing coaches now have a ton of game film, and you have to wonder how all these off-field distractions are going to impact his on-field performance. He may go out there and try and push everything to the side and have another outstanding season, but more likely than not, teams are going to key on him, and Texas A&M won't be sneaking up on anybody in the 2013 season.
Going to the team that they beat last year that probably helped them win the Heisman, Alabama, the greatest run, I'm sure, for being a favorite, but how difficult has it been for the books to win on the side? Are they putting a big enough number to win money on the Bama bets over these years?
Well, Alabama actually still has a little ways to go to catch that dynamic USC team of the mid-2000s, who was favored from 2003 out to 2007,
okay.
I believe in the high 50s. But Bama this year is expected to be favored in all 12 of their regular season games, mm-hmm. most likely be favored in the SEC championship, and then subsequently whatever BCS bowl game they end up in. But from an against-the-spread standpoint, Alabama has not been an automatic bet on for a lot of the general public.
Hmm.
Some of their numbers are real price prohibitive. You look at their schedule this year, and you see them listed as north of a 42-point favorite against Colorado State. They'll be double-digit favorites in every game this year outside of that Texas A&M contest, assuming Manziel is the one under center.
Hmm.
Todd Furman of DonBest.com joining us here, and he will each and every Thursday at 3:10 here on Unsportsmanlike Conduct as we get the best numbers from Las Vegas. If you polled most of the college football experts, the prognosticators, the most popular national championship matchup is Alabama-Ohio State. But how do the bettors see that?
It seems awfully easy to pick those two teams to try and get there. I think the team that's not getting enough respect from some of the casual bettors is actually Oregon. You look at this team, there's a good reason that win total is set at 11. Marcus Mariota not getting any of this Heisman fanfare because obviously people are real concerned about how the coaching change will impact this Oregon Ducks team. Their trickiest game, though, does come on a Thursday night when they go up to Stanford. They'll be a short favorite in that game if the numbers hold for that particular contest. But they have a great shot to run the table, be 12-0, and possibly be matched up with an Alabama or Ohio State in the national title.
When you look at off-season, usually you get a lot of suspensions late, and they affect the first game. TCU's got a couple. LSU did not suspend their guy. How has that number moved at all with TCU deciding yes to suspend and LSU not deciding to spend their running back?
That number is held pretty steady at 4. There were a couple of books that opened that price upwards of 6, but they took such low limits at that point that it really wasn't worth paying attention to.
Okay.
The over-under on that game listed at 50.5, and you talk about Jeremy Hill and his what was tenuous status.
Yep.
I think this game will boil down to the development of Zach Mettenberger. The interesting part with LSU when you talk about this team, when they're not pegged in the top 10 entering the season in the last 10 years, they've only been there twice. They just happened to go 13-1 and 11-2 those 2 years. So Les Miles seems to get more out of his team when he takes an us-against-the-world mentality.
Mm. Todd Furman of DonBest.com joining us here on Unsportsmanlike Conduct. Going back to Heisman candidates for just a moment, we have so many good, viable candidates who are also conference rivals. When you look at strong Heisman candidates, you know, for example, in the Big Ten, you got Braxton Miller, Taylor Martinez. When you go to the SEC, you've got at least three different candidates if you keep Manziel in there, and actually four if you throw in Jadeveon Clowney, Aaron Murray, A.J. McCarron. When you're betting a Heisman candidate, you're almost betting for that team also to go on and win the conference title, aren't you?
You definitely have to think that the team is going to be in national conversations throughout the course of the year. Although Robert Griffin III kind of helped squash some of those notions. I mean, Baylor wasn't competing for a national title, but he really asserted himself as the most dynamic player. Last year, Johnny Manziel's numbers spoke for themselves. But it'll make things interesting and why I think a guy like Teddy Bridgewater is such a compelling story this season. Louisville's schedule sets up quite favorably for them to go 12-0. If they do that, find a way to get a little bit of help and sneak into the national championship, I think Bridgewater is going to be a big reason behind it and really going to have to take a long look at him. But don't write off Taylor Martinez yet. He's kind of my dark horse in that 30-40-1 range to win the Heisman. I think that schedule sets up very favorably, and Nebraska's going to have to score an awful lot of points until they shore up that leaky defense.
Who's your favorite?
My favorite, I think you have to look at a guy like Marcus Mariota. I think he'll be out there for a lot more game time than he was last year. listing him at 12-1 offers a little bit of value. The one real hard part, though, is if you're betting the Heisman Trophy at this point in the season, so many guys come from off the pace, and would tell people to treat this more as a bet for pure enjoyment than a real investment opportunity. I'm not all that confident in any of these guys. All it takes is one injury, and it eliminates them from contention.
And I completely agree with you. I just look at what A.J. McCarron's done the last couple years, and a lot of times you'll see voters go with that career achievement award. If he has a similar season than he had last year, and they go and they're the national championship kind of team again, I could see him winning easily.
I definitely think that could be the case, but you talked about conference rivals. A.J. McCarron may run into his own teammate stealing some of the votes down there if T.J. Yeldon puts together a tremendous season, and that's one of the problems he'll run into. Amari Cooper would be a guy that you're going to look at as an elite wide receiver, but clearly if he has a big year, A.J. McCarron is going to be a big reason behind it. And the unfortunate part for Alabama, that offense just doesn't cater to gaudy stats like it would in some of these spread attacks for other power programs.
Todd Furman of DonBest.com joining us, as he will every Thursday at 3:10 here on Unsportsmanlike Conduct. You recently wrote about the difference between a sports bettor and someone who just bets sports, that being kind of more of the casual, you know, sports bettor. In which group are we seeing the biggest growth in numbers?
I think you're seeing growth in both groups, to be honest. I know I did with that article offend my dad, who read that thing and knew that I was taking some shots directly at him for doing most of his handicapping Saturday morning watching College Game Day, but that's a story for a different day. I think what with the advent of Twitter and what we've seen through social media, there's so much more access to a lot of real-time information, both from the betting community, beat writers, that bettors on the whole are much more educated than they were when I broke into the industry 8 years ago. There's that higher level of confidence that comes along with it. And as a result, you've seen that average bet size increase for folks that like to think of themselves as professional bettors. The reality of it is, even if the stats show that, you know, maybe 5 to 6% these days can consistently turn a profit, I still make that number much lower. And you have to be in that 1.5% to 2% if you're going to look me in the eye and tell me you make money, whether it's betting one sport or every sport, year in, year out.
You know, Todd, it's funny. What's changed so much about Twitter, and I've seen this with Nebraska, a lot of times there is a late scratch, and it happened, and you see it because a reporter that you know is down on the field, notices the guy's not in uniform, and he tweets it, and it's right before the game. It's funny how that has changed, really giving you that late information that maybe Vegas had before, but nobody else had.
No, and that's the one thing. You talk to a lot of the professionals that have been in this business for years, and they say Twitter's actually been the worst thing for their handicapping because they only have a few minutes to try and get down on those games when there's a change in lineups, when there's an injury, compared to years ago where it might take 4 or 5 hours for the information to filter into the sports book. So that edge that was out there doesn't exist for quite as long, and it really becomes a rat race, for a lack of a better term, to try and get the best information. The reality of it is, much like the stock market, he who has the best information will consistently cash more tickets than his competition.
Todd, we are seeing so much more soccer on television, Premier League, other soccer leagues, you know, especially during the daytime on weekdays when we're not used to seeing a lot of live sports, say, for Major League Baseball. Are we seeing an increase in the number of soccer bets being placed?
It's definitely increased. The problem we have out here in Vegas is that a lot of the sports books don't really want to go to the great lengths they need to increase their soccer offerings. A hotel like the LVH goes above and beyond to try and put out a lot of the major domestic leagues in Europe, whether it's the English Premier League, Serie A, or some of the Scandinavian leagues throughout the summer. I think the way NBC Sports Network has approached it, trying to show every game, it's going to create a level of familiarity, and as a result, you're going to see betting increase. The unfortunate part for us out here on the West Coast, if I want to watch the Arsenal-Fulham game right out of the gates, I need to be up at 4:45, and that's early even by my standards to start tailgating on a Saturday.
Tailgating for soccer. Okay, so I'm looking at the first week, and I know we'll get into more of this next week, but one of the ones that jumped out at me quickly was USC-Hawaii. USC's only favored 22.5. A lot to prove for USC. They're going to play both quarterbacks probably, get them both in there, so the backup's going to continue to try to win a job. Plus, Hawaii was one of the worst teams in college football last year. Seems like a low number to me.
Yeah, the price at 22, you're talking about a road favorite, laying 3 touchdowns traveling across. There's only one way to look at this game, and I think it would be USC. However, typically early in the season with so many questions surrounding that USC quarterback situation, I'm just not sure I want to try and lay 3 touchdowns there. I think they may be a little cautious with Marquise Lee and his shoulder. But you talk about USC early in the year, they could be a team to play on because they have a ton of talent at the skill positions. It'll be late in the season if they start to get worn down with limited depth that you're going to find a number of opportunities. And Lane Kiffin seems to have a knack for beating up on inferior opponents. It's when he's matched wits on the opposing sideline that he may struggle some.
Todd's going to join us every Thursday at 3:10. And, of course, next week we'll actually have games to talk about. Give us just a quick preview of what we can expect week to week as we bring you on.
Definitely going to try and break down as many games as we can, try and raise that overall gambling IQ for all the listeners, and always encourage them, like you guys have done, to follow me on Twitter. Happy to answer any questions there as well. I know it's a steady evolution, but sports betting is here to stay, and hopefully, you know, we can try and help everybody out who's listening and appreciate the opportunity to join you guys each and every week throughout the course of the fall.
And we love it as well. Todd Furman, DonBest.com. He also has his own website, ToddsTake.com, where he offers a lot of insight, not just in football, but a lot of sports. Mm-hmm. Todd, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you next week.
I appreciate you guys having me, and good luck with all your preseason action this weekend as well.
Thank you very much, Todd.
Todd Furman, DonBest.com. You can follow him at Todd Furman. Furman is spelled F-U-F-U-H-R-M-A-N. Todd, at Todd Furman.